Hello and welcome back to The Dark Side. I mean Vox Pop. It's WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. May the Force be with you.
Nanu, nanu.
The newest episode in the Star Wars franchise hits theaters tomorrow. Star Wars The Force Awakens is set 30 years after the events that transpired in 1983's Return of the Jedi. Now, very little is known about the plot thanks to tight-lipped studio execs and gagged journalists, but the impending release has fans a wee bit more than excited. The world's obsession with Star Wars dates back to 1977 when the first movie, A New Hope, came out, and since then the Star Wars canon has become one of the pillars of American pop culture. Today we welcome one of the biggest geeks in the region to talk about Star Wars and its massive impact on society, pop culture journalist Rick Marshall. Rick is the former editor of MTV News' Splash Page blog and has been dubbed a professional geek by the likes of ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox Business, Spike TV, and more. He's an industry expert, regularly providing news, reviews, and pop culture commentary for movies.com and digital trends, and he's brought some toys. Oh, Rick, always nice to have you on the show. Welcome back.
It is great to be here.
You're such a big star now that you were on Fox Business News. That was huge. That appearance was, we watched it in the newsroom. It was massive. Also here, making a rare appearance on Vox Pop, Zach the Engineer. He's the biggest Star Wars nerd we've ever met. Zach, nice to have you on this side of the glass.
Thank you, Ray.
Doing a great job so far.
So Thank you.
Let's reminisce about the fall of the Galactic Empire and the triumph of the Rebel Alliance. What are your theories about the new film? Well, we want to know. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Rick, before we get to the film, you were on Fox Business News a week or two ago. Was it last week?
I was, yeah.
And we stood around watching it, and you had a box on your head. What was that all about?
That was the Google Cardboard. Google is part of their big partnership with Disney and Lucasfilm and Star Wars in particular. They're going all out with this stuff. And Google Cardboard has a this VR, sort of like consumer-friendly VR system.
Okay, now VR is virtual reality?
Virtual reality, okay. Yeah. And, you know, you don't need to spend all the money on like an Oculus Rift or any of the big the Samsung VR system that are out there. You can get these things called Cardboard, which quite literally that's what it is. It's Cardboard. And you kind of fold them around your phone, and they have lenses in them, and they can kind of integrate a divided image into a 3D, 360-degree sort of experience. And Google Cardboard sort of cooperated with Star Wars to create a whole bunch of little serialized adventures that sort of serve as a prequel to The Force Awakens.
Wow. So the marketing is off the charts for this film, and they expect to make billions of dollars. Now, I'm decades older than you guys, but I went to the I was 12, I think, and I went to the first movie at that movie theater in Chatham that summer of 77, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was enormous. It was like Beatlemania. What was the first film you guys saw?
Empire Strikes Back for me. I remember sitting in the theater watching Empire Strikes Back, watching this particularly the Hoth battle scene, seeing the AT-ATs pretty much changed my views of movies for the rest of my life. That was the toy that I always wanted. That was the first Star Wars toy I remember getting, was like the big AT-AT, and like everything was about that AT-AT. I wish I still had it. I'm pretty sure it's buried in a backyard somewhere now.
Well, you have a lot of toys.
I do. I could probably replace that AT-AT.
So that was 1981? Well, what year was that?
80. 1980 Empire came out, yeah. And I think I hid under the theater seat for probably about two-thirds of the movie, because I think I was only 3 or 4 years old at that point. But
well, that was the last Star Wars movie I saw at the movies.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
The second one.
Really?
You didn't see Jedi?
I saw the Jedi on TV, and I thought it just jumped the shark. The ending was just Muppets jumping around in trees.
That's not an uncommon. It's a polarized. Return of the Jedi is a very polarizing film. Some people definitely agree with you on that one.
It does have an abundance of space bears.
Yeah. Oh, is that what they are?
Well, Ewoks, like, they're space bears is what they are. They're little teddy bears in space.
But my kids love it. And actually, we have the newer ones, which my kids call the first three. I don't get it, but we were watching it the fourth made last night. It's a pretty good flick.
Yeah, there's where you probably find a lot of disagreement. Phantom Menace.
We're talking about Episode One.
I guess. It's episode one.
Okay. Yeah, Phantom Menace, yeah.
The first one they made is really episode four.
Right.
A lot of people say you can even watch the entire, like, there's been a lot of talk recently about how you go about watching a Star Wars marathon.
Yeah.
What the correct order is, what people have suggested. Do you watch them in the order of them coming out in theaters? Do you watch them in the order of the episodic order? There's actually this really great piece I was reading recently that was arguing for this this particular order where you watch the original Star Wars there, the 77, you watch episode 4 and 5, and then you watch episode 2 and 3, and then you watch Return of the Jedi last, and you just skip Phantom Menace entirely, because if you think about it, and he made this pretty great rationale for this, that nothing integral to the rest of the movie and the rest of the franchise actually happens in the Phantom
Menace.
That's
good. It's a standalone picture. That's fine.
And so it's really, really interesting because like, it was this great sort of reason why you watch it in that order. And it's sort of the first Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. They sort of set up Luke and that whole story. And then it ends on a cliffhanger and Empire Strikes Back. And then you watch episode 2 and episode 3, which explain Anakin's backstory and what got him to the point that he gets to.
Yeah.
And then you watch Return of the Jedi to find out how that cliffhanger is resolved, like what, how this whole relationship between Luke and Darth Vader is resolved.
So someone really obviously gave this way too much thought.
Yes. It was a very long article that I definitely spent a lot of time reading.
It's a theory I agree with, though. I wholeheartedly agree that episode 1, you know, while visually astounding when it first came out, is seriously the most useless of the whole franchise.
800-348-2551 is our telephone number. This one came in via email from someone named Ian. And the question is, whither Lando Calrissian? Is he being shelved for a future sequel, or is he missing because his character died / went missing during the 30 years after Jedi?
Well, that's where you get into a whole lot of areas that nobody's going to want to spoil anything. Nobody's going to really want to let you know why he might or might not be in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to be probably resolved in this film. And I think that, you know, it's good to have questions like that. These are all the questions that build into it. But no one really wants to know this stuff going into the movie. I mean, even if I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't say it.
Which I'm sure you do. I'm sure you know all the answers, and you're not going to say. And, of course, the question that my kids are talking about is Luke Skywalker,
whether
he's in the movie. And my answer, of course, kids, he's got to be in the movie. So expect it.
Well, he definitely.
Well, we know he is.
Yeah,
Oh, really?
We know he is. We don't know exactly what his role is ultimately, which I don't know if you want to know. I don't.
No.
So, like father, like son, he's going to the dark side, is what you're saying.
That's a theory that's been going on.
They've done a really interesting thing with him too, in that he has not been made available as part of the promotional sort of circuit for the movie. All of the veteran cast members who have, you know, who are have been officially confirmed for the cast have been part of the roundtable, the interviews, all of the press junkets, things like that. The one conspicuous absence is Mark Hamill. And that's led to a lot of questions. That's probably the biggest question going into The Force Awakens is what happens with Skywalker.
We're talking Star Wars today with Rick Marshall and our own Zach Malloy, the engineer. And, you know, Zach, you mentioned the effects. And I was reading a little bit about this. And J.J. Abrams, he did this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he went back, he got rid of the digital effects
and
went back to the old school effects that made, you guys weren't, I don't know if you were born or whatever, but in 1977, those effects blew our minds.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the greatest thing we've ever seen on a movie screen.
Mm-hmm. The Jim Henson's heavily involved with a lot of that stuff. And that was the prime effects at the time. And that whole studio and all the things that were going on there, was the effects of the time. And it's really interesting, though, because there actually is quite a bit of digital effects in The Force Awakens, but the fact that they've also included a lot of the practical effects it sort of makes it stand out from the prequel trilogy, because that was entirely digital effects.
So, yeah.
I mean, there was nothing really real about a lot of what was going on.
Which is why a lot of people were so upset when George Lucas went back and redid the original trilogy and added a whole bunch of digital stuff over the original stuff.
And he changed the ending of Jedi? One of those movies, he changed the ending.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he changed. He changed the story in so many ways.
Yeah.
And
that sort of revisionist history by a producer, director, I think it should be not allowed.
I agree.
I mean, do you want the Beatles going back and adding new parts to Strawberry Fields Forever? No, you
don't. Well, no. I mean,
well, it'd be one thing if he did that and then people could actually access both the originals and the sort of revised versions.
Yeah.
But he won't.
They've made it a point to never sort of release any of those original versions of the films in the sort of high quality versions that we're accustomed to seeing now,
right,
that we want to see now. Those are gone unless you know sort of nowhere to look online type of thing. Like, you can't really find them.
Well, the reviews for the new one are largely magnificent, based mm-hmm. on
very
what
much
I've
so.
Seen.
Yeah.
And one of the things I thought was neat about using the old school effects is it drove the budget up enormously, and so they have to make a couple $100 million to break even, but chances are they will make $2 billion or more.
It's almost certainly going to be one of the biggest films of all time, if not the biggest. I mean, it's already charting to have the biggest opening weekend of all time right now. It's already the biggest opening weekend in terms of advance ticket sales.
Yeah. All right, we're joined today by Rick Marshall and Zach Molloy. The new Star Wars movie premieres tomorrow. We're taking your calls at 800-348-2551. We'll take a break, and then we'll get to the phones.
Support for WAMC comes from the Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. Skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. Capital Wine, corner of State and Lark Street, Albany, New York. Announcing book signing with winemaker J. Stephen Cassells, author of Grapes of the Hudson Valley, this Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. CapitalWineAlbany.com. Mango Tree Imports, Saratoga Springs, New York. A locally owned fair trade store featuring holiday candles hand-poured by Iraqi refugees, open 7 days a week, mangotreeimports.com. Rhinebeck Artist Shop, professional picture framing and fine art materials, art sets and stocking stuffers, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com. And Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the capital region and beyond, marketing creative and business ideas since 1996, imediaconsult.com.
Zach, I am your father, Zach.
Nice to have you back here at Star Wars. We're here, Ray Graff here with Zach the Engineer and Rick Marshall, Professional Geek, talking about the new Star Wars picture. Now, you have not seen it, Rick?
I have not had
one of those journalist previews?
Nope. I have not. Up here, they don't get the larger movies don't get the early screening sometimes up here. But a lot of the folks I know in New York and L.A. have seen it. And I think it's really interesting because they have remained remarkably silent about it other than to say that they liked it, which is great. But I think that's a combination of both the, as you mentioned earlier, the NDAs and gag orders and embargoes,
right,
and things like that, and the fact that I think there's an active realization that spoiling Star Wars is something that could just end your career.
Sacrilegious.
Well, the thing is, we've had this argument in my house. I mean, the kids want to go on. They want to go tomorrow. I said, mm-hmm, you are out of your mind. We are not going for at least 3 weeks. My wife said, well, then someone will spoil it for us. And I said, it's very simple. Do what I do. Don't talk to anybody.
Stay off the internet.
Don't do anything.
If you can stay off the internet, you might be able to avoid some of the things. But I've really actually been surprised by how much people have avoided spoilers and how there's been just this theme going across all of my sort of social media feeds that has been like, if you spoil Star Wars, we're through.
Yeah.
Like our
you're
friendship,
dead to me.
Our relationship.
I like it. I like it. All right, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Ramon in Montgomery, you're on.
Hello. Okay. I hope you can answer this for me, the veracity of this. Since in the late 80s, I worked with a fella who was an uber geek. And he said Lucas changed the whole plot. Now, I want to know the veracity of this. He said originally the storyline was that they couldn't unseat the Republic because the Jedi were just too tough. They couldn't send troops after them because they would always win. So what they did was they cloned Jedi, and they would send the Jedi after himself, numerous ones. And that was the only way to kill off all the Jedi. And that explains in the first storyline why they were scattered and extinct. So then he also explained that what happened was that Darth Vader was a clone of Anakin Skywalker, and he killed his clone, the one he was cloned after, which was the mission. And that's why Obi-Wan says that Darth Vader killed his father. And then later on, when he says to Luke, I am your father, the story is he says that because he's essentially the same man since he's a clone of him.
Wow.
And that was the whole Clone Wars, was sending clones after the Jedi to be able to unseat their power protecting the Republic so that the Empire could come in.
Well, the best thing about this now is the fact that, you know, we actually have, we've seen the scripts and such, so we know that, you know, not a lot was sort of changed leading right up to the movie. I mean, we've seen the scripts of these things, but there has been so much expanded universe material over the years. I mean, all of these things.
This is in the 80s, though. This is before internet and whatnot. This is late 80s. And then he also said that Obi-Wan is OB number one, that's a designation for the clone that he was, and he was after a Jedi, but he went off mission and he went to the good side.
Well, it's certainly not part of the actual
clone
accepted canon of the franchise, but like I said, there's been tons and tons of expanded universe material over the years. There, even in the 80s, was being created in novels, in comic books, in tie-ins, in all over.
So there's no veracity to it.
Not as far as I know, but I mean, somebody could have wrote something like this at some point. There's so much expanded universe, and what's really interesting right now is the fact that Disney basically threw out a lot of that, which has caused a lot of sort of not great feelings from a lot of people who love some of that expanded universe and the other sort of adventures that, you know, explored what happened way early on in the franchise that might not have been covered in the movies.
Huh.
What he laid out explained why Obi-Wan said he killed your father, and then later he says, I am your father. Because there's a lot of problems with Star Wars if you go by the stories that they've presented.
Oh, certainly. It's not a perfect movie, but no, it's that's nothing. I've never actually heard any of that, but I've heard a lot of different fan theories over the years as to why certain things happened that have sort of explained some of the little holes here and there. And I think that's why it's a good thing that maybe, you know, Lucas didn't explain exactly what happened in some areas, because sometimes not knowing these things leads people to create these really great stories for why these lines of dialogue were said, or why this person acted a certain way. And I think that's sort of the magic of Star Wars, is that it's written just enough to tell the story, but it leaves just enough to the imagination to create this entire universe for its fans.
Ramon, thanks for the call. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here on a Vox Pop. Tomorrow is the big debut of the Star Wars The Force Awakens flick. It promises to be enormous. And we are here with Rick Marshall and Zach the Engineer to talk about that movie. These guys are Star Wars geeks, if you've ever seen one. This one came in via email. This one says, Can you address the somewhat Lucas-corroborated theory that Jar Jar Binks is actually an evil Sith drunken master-style fighter, and the fans' hatred of him forced Lucas to abandon the playing out of that idea?
Wow.
That's just brilliant. I've never heard that before, but
I wish that were true.
So do I. Oh, wow. Oh.
Okay.
Jar Jar, the most polarizing probably figure in all of Star Wars universe.
Just because he's annoying?
Yeah.
Well, he's annoying to those who grew up with the original trilogy, you know. I mean, I have friends that have kids that think he's hysterical, but to them, you know, everything is Star Wars, you know, episodes 1 through 6, the Clone Wars, the video games, you know, there's no separation yet. Once they know what bad acting and bad dialogue is, we hope they'll differentiate them. But
who knew you were so acerbic? All right, let's go to Jamie in Ellenville. Jamie, you're on.
Oh, my God. Everything that you've heard so far is like dribble from like Dungeons and Dragons playing, Klingon-speaking individuals.
I've never played.
Like, made up all these theories in the 80s about like all these characters, and the truth is you don't need any of it. If anybody could read, like, other than the first book that came out after the Star Wars trilogy, every single book had to guarantee that it fit into the story. And like the three that were written following this, like the blowing up of the Death Star, which were written I think by Anderson, were like the most terrifying three books you could ever read in Star Wars. It involved Luke going to the dark side and that planet that he came, you know, where it all started. And it involved like introducing incredible characters like Jada Pinkett, you know, is the Emperor's assassin. And like they were written by the best sci-fi writers in the world. And it's just a shame that like Disney's like, oh no, we're going to throw that in the garbage because we don't want to pay them any royalty.
Yeah, you're certainly not alone in having some bad feelings about the decision to get rid of the expanded universe material. I mean, from a business perspective, it makes sense that they would want to do that and start over with a clean slate, and that's just sort of the Disney way. But it's unfortunate because I was a longtime reader of the Dark Horse comics, the comic book expanded universe.
Everything fit.
And like, they were fantastic. Yeah, and they were absolutely fantastic. And it's unfortunate to see them sort of go into the sort of alternate world, doesn't really happen in canon area. But, you know, I'm also sort of optimistic that we're going to get some good stuff from Marvel Comics' sort of stewardship of the Star Wars line, because they originally started out with some really great comics. And you can't deny the fact that Marvel Comics did a great job with the Star Wars license the first time they had it. And so I'm hoping that...
Yeah. That was back in 77, yeah. I think.
Absolutely.
Number one. Yeah.
Yeah, and those comics are fantastic.
Like this story from the like the minor perspective of like people that like aren't making all the big decisions, you know, it's like involves like being on the earth, you know, on the ground more.
Well, it feels good that some of the folks who have been involved from the start with Star Wars are still involved with Star Wars under Disney. People like Kathleen Kennedy and some of the folks who have been involved from the very start with things are still taking an active role in sort of shaping the future of the Star Wars universe. And you know, I'm as always, I'm cautiously optimistic. I do sort of feel bad about the loss.
Bottom line, they have a
universe.
Lot of story to meet up to that was already written. It's really a shame we're never going to see those brought to life. Right?
But hey, the good thing is they're still out there to always read and to always go through anytime you want to. I mean, you know, they just because they're not part of the canon anymore doesn't mean they don't exist. The stories
they're unauthorized books, though, right?
Well, now they were fine and authorized, and they had the official licenses. But when Disney took over the Star Wars license, they basically said, you know, this is what's in continuity now, and it's none of any of these things that weren't in the movies.
So Disney still owns. So this is a Disney production that we will see tomorrow?
Yes, Disney. Yep, Disney owns Lucasfilm. They acquired Lucasfilm back in the day for a number of years ago for about $4 billion, and now everyone is saying, I mean, that's pennies compared to what they're likely to make with Star Wars in the future.
Now, does Lucas have any creative say? Does he pipe in and
he's
say, "Well,
he stepped away from it for the most part." Yeah,
no,
yeah.
He's letting JJ and his excuse me, he's got the screenwriter of Empire and Jedi, Lawrence Kasdan, screenwriter extraordinaire, who also wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark, Big Chill. Mm-hmm. He brought him back. So
the creative teams for a lot of the movies are still involved with, and people who sort of shape Star Wars universe are still involved with the future on the big screen. But George Lucas himself is entirely really distanced himself from it. And it's actually been interesting to watch him do interviews about related to The Force Awakens leading up to, because he's made it very clear that this is not his thing anymore. This is not his child anymore.
Right.
It's moved on. But people, you know, keep wanting to ask him about things. It's both uncomfortable and just really fascinating to watch him deal with the questions, because he is so associated with the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, kind of got trapped. Kind of trapped himself.
Yeah, very much so.
We're joined today by Rick Marshall and Zach Molloy. We talk Star Wars today. Number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. I saw a piece in the news today. J.J. Abrams, very, very relieved that finally the movie is coming out.
I bet.
I mean, I think it's probably weighed on his mind for a long time.
I bet. Well, and, you know, consider the physical injuries that's happened during the production. Harrison Ford hurt himself. J.J. Abrams hurt himself trying to help Harrison Ford.
How did Harrison Ford hurt himself?
He hit him. He like basically hurt his leg while on a Millennium Falcon set.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, and he had to be airlifted out from the
blast door. Came down, something like that. J.J. Abrams tried to help by lifting the door, popped his back. It was like, well, that doesn't sound too good.
It was interesting. The insurance, you know, sort of insurance has to kick in, because then they have to extend the shooting schedule for the actors and things like that. And it was a pretty big issue, because it took him out of the mix for a couple of weeks at the very least, and it was pretty impressive, though, that, you know, Harrison Ford is up there doing these types of things still. So.
It's funny, you know, those things don't happen when you do CGI films.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah, they really built a life size you know, Millennium Falcon sets, and I guess these are things that happen when you're doing that. But yeah, J.J. Abrams, though, you know what? As much as he is sort of relieved to have the movie come out, it's also, at this point, I feel like it's got to be kind of old hat for him, because he just rebooted Star Trek not too long ago.
And did such a great job, by the way. If he
if
he does a job like he did with Star Trek, especially the first one, this is going to be something special.
Yeah.
He's got that fan sort of mentality where he keeps reverence to the original, but doesn't make a clone. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
pretty much so.
And I mean, I loved the fact that they brought him on board to do it. Considering, like, you know, all the, you know, like, you know, because, you know, I first, like, I, he did Regarding Henry. He wrote Regarding Henry. That was the first thing I ever saw that J.J. Abrams ever wrote, and it was the first time I ever saw Harrison Ford, aka Han Solo, not be a tough guy. And it was all because of J.J. Abrams. And I was like, wow, this kind of makes a lot of sense.
Abrams is a fantastic director. He was the perfect choice for this, especially after what he did with Star Trek, because he, like you said, understands fandom, but also understands how to operate within fandom and what's expected to also create something that's new and original. And I think he's the perfect choice for it.
All the Star Wars references that he put in Lost, his TV show.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
I wonder what the studio execs had to say when he said, look, we're ditching the CGI for real old school effects. I wonder what they said about that.
I think this was the challenge for him, because Star Trek was such a CGI heavy film.
Yeah.
And when he
and
went
well
to do
done
Star
too.
Yes, very much so. And when he went to Star Wars, to have gone back to that, he recognized that the practical effects were what made the original movies so sort of engrossing and magical and such a memorable experience. And he did as much of that, I think, as he possibly could. And he also knew that it's Star Wars, and you can kind of get that extra budget. You can get that extra money, mm-hmm. because everyone knows that this isn't a movie you're going to have to market too much. It's Star Wars.
But yet they will, and you have already how many toys and doodads and items already out? Four?
Well,
I've already bought four action figures.
No, but how many are? Zach has four, but how many are out there?
It's an interesting thing to watch too, because I feel like while there have been a lot of Star Wars ads and trailers and things like that, they're also letting the sort of branding partnerships do a lot of the promotion for them. These Jeep ads, all of these companies that are buying into Star Wars and saying, just let us slap a Star Wars label mm-hmm. on our product and do this. And I feel like Disney's actually letting them do a lot of the Star Wars advertising for them.
Well, you know, it works for Trump. If you don't have to spend your own money, then it'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching football the other day, and I think every single commercial break had at least one, sometimes two, Star Wars branded products being advertised.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Let's go to Joe in Bethlehem. Joe.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, you're on.
Well, I wanted to, this conversation must sound sort of crazy to some people.
Yes, it does.
But if anybody wants to really understand the relationship that Star Wars fans have with the movies, they really should watch the documentary, The People versus George Lucas.
Seen it. It's great.
It's very interesting. I like that documentary. It actually gave a look at things that sometimes you don't see just being aware of the movie's existence or being aware of the movies. Here's this sort of fandom that you don't really know about unless you attend conventions or follow these types of everything that happens with the movies and the development cycle and things like that. It was a good documentary. I enjoyed it.
Exactly. It's the ownership that people feel over the story and kind of the resentment over the, you know, second series of movies is really well done in that movie. And I think it's, even if people aren't fans, it's kind of a fascinating look at, like you say, the fan culture and, what people's expectations are versus, the artist, wants to express.
It's astounding, like, how deep they went with, like, you know, how much Star Wars means to so many people the world over.
Well, you saw
absolutely.
that man who was terminally ill, a man who got to see the Force Awakens a while ago, an early copy of that. I think that was like a really great example of sort of the fandom, because not just what happened, but when they sort of put the spotlight on him and how much of a fan he was and how much of a part of his life it was. I think it was really interesting because it gave you a glimpse of how, you know, you don't have to be a crazy person to really love Star Wars.
I mean,
it's
but it helps.
Something, yeah, certainly.
Joe, but thank you for the call. But I mean,
something to love.
You know, I see the complaint that Joe would have and people would have with the newer three films. But even by your standards, you're old compared to my children, and those are the first three they saw, and they love those three movies. I mean, they're magical movies to little kids, and so, just because a fan claims ownership over something,
mm-hmm.
doesn't necessarily make the next three that they made bad things.
Oh, absolutely not. And but I think that's the important distinction, too, is that your kids or anyone who's seen these movies and loved them, they're fans, too. Fans is not just a fans of the original trilogy. Fans is an all-encompassing Star Wars fans. You're fans of this universe. You're not fans of any particular certain movies in it. You're fans of the whole universe. And that's what I think people have to understand, too, when you use the word fans. And I think that's also the amazing thing about Star Wars is that it's rare to have such a generation-spanning franchise like this where there's a great many kids whose first experience with Star Wars is going to be those prequel movies, and then they get into the original trilogy. But it's something you can share with your parents, and you can talk about, and you can talk about your experience seeing them. And I think it takes away from the positive side of this whole thing to actually argue about sometimes, you know, well, these don't count, or...
Right. But that's what fanatics do.
Yeah.
James Bond fans, same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So my feeling is... it all begins again tomorrow. And after tomorrow morning or tomorrow, whenever the first airing of the film, we're all back to...
a whole new generation of fans.
Exactly.
Can't wait.
We'll be back.
For WAMC comes from Pave Tile Wood and Stone. Using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone. Showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preserveNYS.org. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Lori Stilwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StilwellCPA.com. And The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, HydeCollection.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Star Wars The Force Awakens premieres tomorrow, and I'm sure the lines have already begun to form. I don't know about in this area, but in some places they've been formed for some time.
They've been lining up in L.A. especially now for like last few days, which is interesting because folks I know out there have just bought tickets online and going and be like, why is everyone waiting outside? Because now there's so much hype for this that theaters are responding by making lots of screenings available. But for some people, the waiting is part of the fun.
Well, for
and you want that good seat.
As I recall, I heard Bertie told us in the newsroom that you have had tickets for some time now.
Yeah. We bought tickets when they first came out, when they were first announced they were going on sale. We went online and got them.
You're going as well, Zach, tomorrow
night? Yeah.
Yeah. There were a lot of New York City and L.A. Friends of mine, the colleagues of mine, who definitely got shut out of both of those sort of venues, like venues they wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, over time, as more theaters have started opening up screenings, have subsequently been able to get tickets. But
I mean, what difference does it make? You wait a day, right? Do you have to go on day one?
Depends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You kind of want to go on day one because, especially in our sort of social media internet world, sometimes you want to also not only avoid spoilers. Granted, we haven't had too many thus far,
right. But
you also want to be part of that conversation. I think Star Wars.
When Han Solo dies, I think it's the worst part of the new film. No! 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. That's not true, as far as I know. 800-348-2551. So you've heard nothing? You've heard no rumors about what's in the flick?
I've heard rumors here and there.
There's always going to be theories, rumors, but nothing concrete.
Yeah, there's always going to be lots of rumors about these things. And to be honest, I sort of chalk them all up as being, oh, that'd be interesting if that happens. I almost don't even want to hear the rumors because then when you see the movie, you sort of have them in the back of your mind. You're wondering whether or not this rumor is going to prove true or that one is, you know.
How tough is it going to be as an aficionado of these, Zach Malloy, to not... look at these through the prism of history and comparison. Won't it ruin your enjoyment to some extent?
I don't think so. I'm predicting no. I'm just looking forward to this. I'm a little wary. I'm a little cautious, as I think a lot of people are. You know, you don't want to get your hopes up too much. It's best to go in with like a little bit of pessimism, I think. But overall, I'm just excited.
The reviews are excellent.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons. Like, you know, I mean, I think I saw online earlier today. It's already got like a 90-something% on Rotten Tomatoes from just like professional critics, which is huge.
Yeah, I believe. Let's see. I think they were all in the 90s. The original trilogy. They were all like somewhere in that 97 to 95% positive range. Empire, then the first, then Star Wars, and then Return of the Jedi. At least audience wise, were all in the 90s. Return of the Jedi kind of got bumped down a little bit, but
yeah.
Professionally, those, it's sort of being reviewed right in the same area as the original trilogy, which is a good sign.
I mean, The Empire Strikes Back, I think, is the best one.
At least it most certainly is. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's almost universally viewed as much better movie than the rest of them. While, you know, it's reviewed right along the same lines as A New Hope, the episode 4 there. But most people would usually agree The Empire Strikes Back was a more complete movie.
Mm. So we really don't know what this story... We know that Han Solo comes back after a long absence, right? And Chewie come back.
Definitely
yes.
know. Yeah, Han Solo.
But do we know anything else about
Chewbacca in it?
The plot line?
We know Leia is in it.
And, we know who's in it, but do we know anything about what transpires, the arc of the story?
Well, it's some of these Star Wars prequel novels that have come out, they were officially licensed as part of Disney's canon now, have come out, and they've sort of set the stage for it. There was one that came out a little while back called Star Wars Aftermath. It's sort of set up what the galaxy's been like after the fall of the second Death Star, destruction of the second Death Star, and Emperor Palpatine in Return of the Jedi. Basically, the galaxy is a very chaotic place right now. If you think about it, the entire government for the cosmos, the galaxy, has been sort of dismantled by this civil war, this revolution.
So it's like Syria.
And so it's going to, and it's going to take a long time to sort of get the Rebel Alliance to become a government that can kind of do the same. They want to make sure that they're not going to repeat the mistakes of the past. And so everything's kind of chaotic right now, especially on the outer reaches. And also, the Empire's still around. I mean, you don't just eliminate the entire Empire. So they're going to be out there doing what they do, trying to, and from their minds, hopefully get their power back.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a very political sort of minefield all around the galaxy right now. And that sort of sets the stage for The Force Awakens.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. We're joined by Rick Marshall and Zach the Engineer. Star Wars The Force Awakens opens tomorrow. Let's go to Joe in Holyoke. Joe.
Hi there. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I wanted to ask what you guys thought about love stories in the movies. Obviously, Han and Leia are one, and then the Anakin and Padme kind of felt a little forced, I felt, in the prequels. I wonder what you thought about love stories in the new movies, whether they should be there, whether they should just leave it and make them adventure movies, or what your thoughts were on that.
Well, that's a great question. I have absolutely no idea if they're going to incorporate a love story in The Force Awakens.
Should be a robot love story this time, right?
You do have that shot of there is that shot in the trailers of Leia very upset about something, holding Han.
So, their dynamic will still be there. I mean, we're assuming that they're still together.
It is a love for the ages.
Yes.
Okay. it's as long as it's done well, I'm pretty much this. Of the same mind with any sort of plot device, with any sort of narrative device like that, as long as it's done well, I welcome it.
As long as the dialogue is right, the performances are right, the chemistry, of course, has to be right. Mm-hmm. And of course, Harrison and Carrie had just, nailed that. I'm open to it.
All right. Well, Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Our number to call is 800-348-2551. The excitement is building. Star Wars The Force Awakens. What time is the first showing locally tomorrow?
Ooh, I don't know. I'm sure it's sometime during the day. It's got to be sometime in the morning.
I know the first one at the one I'm going to is at 7 p.m. But if there's an earlier one, I don't think I know about it.
So on premiere day, they would not just wait until evening to start it.
Technically, the movie premieres on Friday the 18th. However, what a lot of studios do now is they have preview screenings that start within a few hours of the previous night, early, in the previous day's evening hours.
Yeah.
It's basically the way they do it. It's both a way for them to jack up sort of the opening weekend numbers in a lot of ways, because you're basically getting an entire day free. But the justification a lot is usually because of all the different time zones. Everything opens at different times. They want to have a worldwide global premiere for it, so it's going to open in certain areas a little bit earlier than others.
Yeah.
So, it technically opens Friday, but screenings happen everywhere on Thursday evening.
Mm. And, you talk about the jacking the box office. Will they need to? You did a piece today.
I just wrote something sort of comparing over at movies.com, basically in my weekly column, basically comparing the numbers and just sort of breaking down the numbers for all of the movies, all six movies, their domestic box office, then sort of adjusting that box office for the according to inflation over the years.
Ticket prices.
Yeah, ticket prices. And
$3 back in the day.
Yep, and wages and everything else. And then sort of looking also at the looking also at the reviews, both from critics, professional critics, and sort of audience reviews. And it was actually kind of fascinating. One of the most surprising things was the fact that Star Wars A New Hope, Episode 4, basically led all the categories.
Which is the first one.
The first one to have been
made in 1977.
Made, yes. Okay. The first one to be made.
For actually, us old timers, that's still the first one.
Yeah. It led all categories, all the box office categories, despite the fact that it was made in 77. It made about $307 million just in 1977 dollars,
yeah.
Which is huge.
And that doesn't count the marketing?
The marketing.
All the toys and the merchandise?
No,
and
that's
else?
Just box office
okay.
sales.
Because
yeah.
I think this would be a pretty enormous component.
Right.
Plus, you also now you have pay-per-view and DVD sales and everything else.
That's an entire area of media that sort of we're still sort of learning about. And the interesting thing about A New Hope, too, is the fact that all that marketing stuff, the toys, all of the products, no one expected A New Hope to be a Star Wars, actually. You know, no one expected Star Wars to be the hit that it became.
Yeah.
So a lot of that marketing came kind of late in the process. The toys and sort of a lot of products for Star Wars were coming out when Empire Strikes Back.
You got an empty box before you got the toys.
Exactly.
They promised you toys, and they just gave you the box.
A lot of toy companies passed on the Star Wars license before it eventually ended at Kenner. And some of those companies, I'm sure, are just kicking themselves now because they would probably, some of them would still be around if they had gotten that Star Wars license.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone. Shelby in Saratoga Springs. Shelby.
Yes, I had a question, like a theory, whether the death of Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi kind of set him up as a martyr for the Empire for the new movies. What do you guys think about that?
Interesting.
I think that could be a very valid plot point. They talk about it a bit in some of the official the tie-in novels and things like that, that both the death of Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine, sort of how each side of the equation sort of viewed these things. You know, the death of Palpatine being the sort of rallying, we've destroyed this dictator, you know, we've brought down this dictator, almost the, you know, pulling the Saddam Hussein statue down sort of moment where we've killed this. Where Darth Vader is sort of viewed as this general that, you know, intimidated a lot of people, but it's Palpatine who's the real sort of head of the Empire.
Okay.
Very interesting thought, though, Shelby. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Max in Hillsdale. Max.
Yeah, hey, I'm excited about it. It's part of my childhood, and but I personally am going to definitely wait for at least a week. I think this idea of going on the first day is basically just announcing that you've become a consumer robot, and it's something to weed out for me to stay excited about it, because the whole franchise idea of Hollywood and these sequels and remakes, and it's, I think, killing things.
Well, here's the issue sometimes with having problems with sequels and remakes can get you into trouble sometimes, because at this point, so much is a sequel or a remake or a reboot or any of those things. So much is based on pre-existing stories. And I guess I'd rather have an original sequel than sometimes just taking the same story and retreading it. So, you know, while I try to stay away sometimes from the from remakes and reboots and things like that, and you go into them with a bit more caution, I'm okay with original sequels. As long as there's a fresh story to tell, they're bringing in some great people to tell it. The cast of directors and filmmakers they have lined up for the rest of the Star Wars franchise are some of my favorite original and originally indie directors and filmmakers of all time. Rian Johnson directing the next one. He did Looper and Brick. I mean, the guy's amazing. And Gareth Edwards, Monster, was one of my favorite sort of horror movies, sort of travelogue horror movies ever. And they're picking all the right people to make these Star Wars movies. If I were to choose my favorite directors, the people who are directing Star Wars movies would probably be a good chunk of them.
Agreed.
Yeah, this one's should be better, but, you know, we should just be a little wary of being fed formula instead of mother's milk.
Fair enough.
Max, well done. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. So you mentioned how many more in the series to come?
Well, they have episode 8 and 9 already sort of planned and officially confirmed. Then they have the two spin-offs. They have the upcoming, Rogue One, a Star Wars story, which tells the story of the group of rebel pilots who stole the plans for the first Death Star.
Yeah.
They're then used in Star Wars, as well as a Han Solo solo film.
Which they're still trying to cast, because there's like 25,000 people wanting to be the new Han Solo.
Yeah. Okay, so it'll be a younger Han Solo?
Yes.
That means then it's not out of the question that some of these characters... In other words, we don't know what of the main characters are going to be in the next movies, because if we did, we would know they survived this movie. So we don't know if any of these characters live or die.
Exactly.
True.
It's very exciting.
Very exciting.
Very much so. They have a massive schedule. I mean, it's basically a Star Wars movie will be coming out every year through, I think, about 2019 or 2020, and they're alternating between the actual sequel movies, so the episodes, and the what they call the Star Wars anthology films, which are all the spin-offs.
Wow, a lot of money to be made. Let's go to Nicholas in Albany. Nicholas.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going?
Good. You're on.
Great. Well, I'm working for FedEx right now, delivering packages for everybody, and I think it's a stressful time. And I just can't wait to see those words scroll. And I know as soon as I see that, it's going to be out of this.
It's going to be amazing.
But I do wonder if we're seeing a trend here with all of these same things coming out, these sequels, these prequels. It's all Star Wars. And then with Ridley Scott working on the new Alien movies and Avengers, if we're ever going to see any new content in theaters.
Well, that's always the question. And the bigger question, however, is whether we'll see people support the original content that does make it to theaters. And thus far, studios are kind of following along with what people are supporting. I mean, we've had some big original movies that have gone to theaters that, you know, haven't done as well as some of the sequels and franchise properties. I mean, Pacific Rim was a massive film that didn't do so well domestically, but made up for it worldwide.
It wasn't very good.
I loved it.
It was pretty cool.
I gotta agree. I love. If you were 10 years old, I think that movie was awesome.
Okay. Yeah, it was.
Well, I think Rick is a little older than 10.
I love the film, and I'm an unabashed fan of it. I'm, but the other ones too. I mean, we've had Gravity came out, and that did well. You know, sci-fi movies and things like that. We've had some great ones come out that have done well, and some that haven't. But by and large, studios look at the track record for sequels and franchises and things like that, and they see those are built-in audiences, and we can guarantee at least this much money from that. Every now and then, they fall off the mark, like the Fantastic Four reboot that just happened and things like that. But by and large, franchises make money.
Well, this one cost how much to make?
Oof. Wow. Off figures, I think they said it was somewhere in the several hundred million dollars.
Wow.
Area. Yeah.
Okay, so I can see that the movie production companies would say, well, you know, we've got to make our money back at least.
Yeah, yeah, and this one, you're pretty much guaranteed with that. I mean, it's already, Disney's in the enviable position right now of actually playing down what they expect the numbers to be on this one. Everyone's projecting it to be the opening weekend of somewhere in the $200 to $220 million opening weekend.
They'll make that if the movie was terrible.
Yeah, they've already sold upwards of 100 million in advance ticket sales. And these are just the sales of people who have bought them already. And you can still go to the theater and buy.
Even if people don't like it, they're going to see it again. It's true. You know, that's just what you do. I didn't like episode one. I saw it again.
Yeah, it's...
I'll admit.
It's going to make a ridiculous amount of money. The big question now is whether or not it becomes the biggest selling movie of all time. Right now, it's got to beat Avatar, which is the highest grossing film of all time.
Which is under Titanic, right? Isn't it?
No, it's Avatar and then Titanic.
Okay,
then Jurassic World, actually.
This was a great time. Rick Marshall and Zach the Engineer. Guys, enjoy the movie tomorrow, Star Wars The Force Awakens, tomorrow and everywhere for weeks and weeks and weeks and months to come.
May the Force be with you.
And also with you. Thanks, everybody, for calling in, and thanks for listening. Support comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York. Hudson Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books and holiday gift ideas. With a second shop on Windermere Avenue in the heart of Greenwood Lake, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Maybe Farm Historic Site, Rotterdam Junction, New York, presenting the Let's Eat exhibit and lecture series exploring food and culture, technology, and history on view now. Schenectadyhistorical.org. The 1850 House and Tavern an historic boutique bed and breakfast on the banks of the Rondout River for weekend getaways, retreats, and weddings. Main Street, Rosendale, New York, the1850house.com. And Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StonesoupConcrete.com on Facebook. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Rick Marshall and Zach the Engineer. Thanks to Jessica O'Rourke for handling the controls today so well. And thanks to Bruce Herbach for answering the phones. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall.
I'm Ray Grath, and I am your father. Stay tuned now for news. We'll be right back.